And now, Veep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
I think of this moment as a moment that is about great momentum, inspired by, yes, optimism, inspired by a crisis, no doubt, but inspired by also our collective ability to see what can be unburdened by what has been.
This has been Veep Thoughts by Kamala Harris.
Stu Does America.
That might be our longest title ever. It took up like half the screen. What a night last night. It was a lot of fun. We did coverage from 6 p.m. Eastern until like 2 or 3 a.m. Eastern on Blaze TV. And then we moved over to youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica and kept going till like 4:15 Eastern. We just kept going and going and going and going and going. If you want to be part of our lives, just go there and subscribe, follow the page and click the bell for notifications, let you know when we do go live. So much to talk about. Daniel Horowitz is going to be here, going to help me recap last night and what we should do with this victory. Like, what, maybe not completely just abandon, just be excited and then never think about it again. So we'll get into that in a little bit, but let's get right into the topic that everyone's talking about. America's complete and total rejection of Kamala Harris. Oh, and I wish if we had more room, I would have added, and Tim Walz, because I hate Tim Walz and I'm so excited he's going to be out of our lives forever, unless you live in Minnesota. But that's kind of on you, not really my fault. Okay, Trump wins 2024 election. The Blaze Media headline, Trump declared winner in the early morning after Harris abandons supporters, which is true. She kind of just walked out on everybody, didn't give a speech. We do expect a speech today, though. Harris to concede tonight. According to Reuters, it's been moved around a couple times. I don't know. I mean, what's she going to say? She's going to say the same thing she said in the freaking Veep Thoughts, which I don't know. I guess, are we done with the Veep Thoughts now? She said she's unburdened by what has been, and she wants to make sure you know that. Let me give you just a rundown. Sorry, as you may know, I spoke nonstop for 9 straight hours last night, so my voice is a little crackly. We did also a radio show this morning, which we got to celebrate the victory. It's fun to go back and watch that. I'm a little tired. I got basically no sleep. I will almost definitely screw some of this up. The show's probably, if you were to look at it objectively on a normal day, you might say, he kind of sucked today. I'm just promising you, going in, this is going to be bad. So now you're kind of bought into that premise, and whatever I give you is probably going to clear that very low hurdle. I will try to do what I can to go through these results. If I screw them up, I'm sorry. That's all I'm going to say. Okay, so we went into this night with an idea of 7 swing states that were going to make the determination of the election. And let me just say this. I was just watching a clip of Jon Stewart. Jon Stewart's like, you damn pollsters. I never want to hear from you again. You suck. Look. There are notable exceptions. My favorite exception will be Iowa, because Iowa had Kamala Harris up 3 with the Ann Selzer poll. We talked a lot about it. I told you why I did not believe it. I did not think it was going to happen. I did not think that Iowa was going to Kamala Harris, and honestly didn't think it was going to be a particularly close race. It was not. Iowa was a blowout, as you kind of might expect it might be. It was a 13-point race, so she missed by 16 points, and everyone will remember that result. But at the end of the day, it was kind of accurate. I think pollsters did a pretty good job here overall, at least when you look at the averages. What they said was going to occur was a close election. And it's kind of what we got, frankly. Now, Donald Trump won all 7, I think, of these swing states. They're not all called yet. But that's not at all inconsistent with what pollsters were saying. In fact, it was pretty close. I mean, it's kind of a boring take, I guess. I'm not swearing at you like Jon Stewart was. Georgia, Donald Trump won by 2 points. Completely consistent with basically our perception of that race. I want to say Donald Trump was legitimately ahead by 2 points in the last polling average that I looked at. North Carolina was a similar story. He won by 3 points. Again, Donald Trump wound up sweeping these states. I told you before when we went into this election that The most likely scenario in a lot of these models was that one of these two candidates would sweep all seven. It's not typical that it would break up because these races were so close. It looks like that's what Donald Trump is going to do. Now, the big thing is that he was able to sweep the blue wall. The blue wall, not really a blue wall when it's all red. Donald Trump in Pennsylvania, 51-48, a 3-point victory. In Michigan, a 1-point victory. And in Wisconsin, a 1-point victory. Again, these races were all really, really close. And Donald Trump was able to eke them out. But this is not a blowout election. It is something every president, when they win elections, say it's a mandate. And I think at some level this is. I think it's a win. It's a good win for Donald Trump. But it's still a close election. This is still close. By the way, Arizona, Donald Trump is up by 5, but only about 63% of the vote in. And then Nevada, 86% of the vote in, Donald Trump up by 4. Kind of a story that we thought going in. As far as my projections go, so far the only state I've missed was Michigan. He only won by 1, but I am surprised, honestly, that he was able to win Michigan of all those states. That was, to me, kind of seemed like the most difficult one. The fact that, and it was probably going to wind up at least either the closest one or the second closest one. But it's an impressive win for Donald Trump. And, you know, with all the corruption that goes on in Michigan and the leadership, the way they changed the laws, if you go back, you can watch Sarah Gonzalez's documentary on that right here on Blaze TV. You'll see they really went to the wall to try to make this easier for people who would typically not vote to go to the polls and or get mail ballots. Or, you know, these laws were manipulated in a way to benefit Democrats, and Trump still won. Pretty impressive. So you got all that going on. That's the presidential race. By the way, Alaska, some places still have not called Alaska. Or Maine, for some reason. Both of these states are pretty obvious. Maine is going to go to the Democrats, and Alaska is going to go to the Republicans. No surprise there. Over on the Senate side, some pretty interesting results. Not all these races, again, have been called, but let me give you some of the big races we talked about going in. Florida did go to Rick Scott pretty easily. That one, the polling, I will say, was pretty off in that particular race. We saw, again, this big red state sort of... They're missing in Florida a lot. They're calling races that are, they're thinking, oh, it's going to be between 3 and 7 points for Rick Scott. He winds up winning by 13 points. So, and once again, Florida does an excellent job actually counting the vote. Unlike any other state in the nation. Now, this is, of course, and Ron DeSantis deserves some credit for it. But I mean, this effort goes all the way back to like Jeb Bush, right? Like they have actually done a good job preparing to run an election like an efficient operation. And I mean, it should be obvious for every state. There seem to be the only ones who are doing it. Couple of other races that might be of interest. Ohio was a big one. Bernie Moreno in a toss-up race. We told you it would go Republican. It did wind up going Republican. West Virginia, Jim Justice. This one we all knew going in would be a pickup for Republicans because Joe Manchin was retiring. Texas said Ted Cruz. We spent a decent amount of time on that. Polls showed him up by between 4 and 7 points. Actually winds up winning by 9 points, so a little bit better than the polls showed. Nebraska, we talked a lot about this race as well. My kind of take on this race was once Nebraska woke up and realized that Dan Osborne was not an independent and all the money was flowing in from George Soros-related organizations, that they would wake up and hold that race. The polling showed it at about a 7-point lead toward the end. She wound up winning by 8 points in Nebraska. That's Deb Fischer's race. Montana was another one. Tim Sheehy, again, pretty consistent with the polling, 53-45. Tim Sheehy wins that race and takes the seat away from John Tester. A couple of others that are of interest and not yet called, Kari Lake and Ruben Gallego. Ruben Gallego currently up by 2 points with 60% of the vote in, so that one too close to call. Nevada, Sam Brown is currently up by 0.1 points with 84% of the vote in. People seem to think that Rosen's going to pull this out at the end, but we will see. Hopefully Sam Brown can win that. He's the Republican in that race. In Wisconsin, Tammy Baldwin leads by about a point over Eric Hovde. Some places have called this already for Baldwin. Michigan, Mike Rogers is down by 0.3 points with over 95% of the vote in. Very, very close race. Rogers did pretty well there. I didn't think that race would be as close as it wound up being, though the late polling did show that race tightening quite a bit. Dave McCormick, I think, is going to win Pennsylvania. He is up by 0.7 points over Bob Casey. And that one is a bit of a surprise to me just because, you know, Casey's name in that state, he's been around forever. Maybe people are sick of him, though, and they should be. He's been, I think, really, really terrible, frankly, for Pennsylvania. And then Maine is not called, but that's Angus King's race. I don't know why they're not calling that. The New York Times isn't calling it for whatever reason. Some places have called that race. What does that all mean? Well, 52 seats locked in. I think McCormick will be 53 in Pennsylvania. Will they get any more? Really a question there. I think there's a chance they pull off one of these other four races that we just discussed. You could get as high as 57. I think that's highly unlikely. Probably 54 is where you're going to end up. Maybe 53. Either way, Republican control of the Senate. This means a lot for, of course, Supreme Court justices and justices as they go down the line. There's a bunch of other stuff we'll talk about. Maybe we'll get into some of it with Daniel Horowitz here in a couple of minutes. What does this all mean for Trump, though? Now, of course, Trump's prosecutions are going to go away for the most part, at least the federal ones. It means curtains for his criminal prosecutions. And, of course, probably means, a lot of his people who have been hit with federal charges that are allies with Trump will probably be pardoned very early. I mean, look, this is not one of those situations where Trump's trying to hide this. He really believes these were malicious prosecutions. Got a lot to back that up, I think, on many of them. And he will, I think, immediately move to just get rid of a lot of this stuff. This, of course, means really wonderful things for the stock market. Bank stocks in advance as traders bet on less regulation in a Trump presidency. At one point today, I don't know where it is now, the market was up like 1,300 points. Really positive things. And of course, that makes sense, right? Like you have an administration that is obviously harshly negative against really anything involved with capitalism. And then you get kind of like, Donald Trump, the guy who was kind of the face of capitalism in the 80s and, of course, had a positive economic environment during his first term as president as well. So no surprise. Another big thing that happened, and this is a change from his 2016 run, Trump was kind of anti-crypto back in 2016, anti-Bitcoin, and that changed over the years. And the Bitcoin community and the associated companies around Bitcoin, as well as other cryptocurrencies, really stepped up and said, hey, we're going to make our muscle felt a little bit in this race. And, they didn't take massive partisan stance. It wasn't like we're only going for Republicans. They went to people and said, how will you be on crypto? And supported a lot of them. One of those was Donald Trump. And Trump took a very aggressive pro-crypto, pro-Bitcoin stance here in this election. And the crypto industry came out for him in a big way. Bitcoin hits now a record high as pro-crypto Trump wins presidency. Again, this is a huge one because, you're seeing this, it was at 74,000. I saw it hit 75 and change. Everyone's got their big projections, but, Trump tends to be good at rewarding people who help him get across a finish line like this. And I think the people who lined up behind him will benefit in a way. And I think, obviously just generally the business environment's going to be a lot better. So a lot of companies will benefit. But like Tesla was up 12% today. I mean, we all know what Elon Musk did for Donald Trump. Very, very helpful in a lot of ways. And, I wouldn't expect a lot of anti-Tesla legislation coming up anytime soon. How did this happen? Well, one of the interesting things in Pennsylvania was the Amish turnout. We talked about this a lot on radio. They turned out in unprecedented numbers. There was reports of 80,000 people. And it's like, the Amish, they don't really like to get involved in politics. They're not a big voting bloc normally. They don't normally care about this stuff. They try to, stay away from the worldly type of stuff. But when you are a Democrat and you get in their business all the time and you tell them, hey, you know what? You're not allowed to sell the milk that you sell. You're not allowed to make the things that you want to make. What about this regulation? How come you're not living up to this? They get fired up just like anybody else. And they get fired up in buggies, but they still got to the polls and they voted in major, major numbers. Now, the excuses are beginning, and maybe we'll play some of I don't know if we'll have time, honestly, to play the, I have some Joe Scarborough reactions, Joy Reid reaction, I will just tell you that I turned on Joe Scarborough this morning as I was getting ready. I slept here at the studios, you know, getting ready this morning. And I'm like, you know what? What should I listen to? Normally, I listen to like podcasts to prep for the show. And I was like, today, I don't care about any of that. I just want to hear something that's going to make me happy. So I turned on Joe Scarborough, Morning Joe. And it was embarrassing. Excuse after excuse after excuse after excuse. Just pathetic. None of them can take responsibility for that. You know, maybe the fact that their worldview sucks. Maybe that's it. That's it, Joe. Maybe you're just insane. Maybe maybe your viewpoints are terrible and your candidates are worse. You ever think of that? Well, this is we're in the first round of excuses, and you'll be surprised to hear that you're to blame because you're a racist and a sexist. For second time in 8 years, a loss for a woman presidential candidate. Yeah, that was one of the big excuses they were throwing out there. The reason they lost was because I think they said, you know, I don't know. What's the difference between Joe Biden in 2020 and Kamala Harris? Could it be that white skin? Could it be the male genitalia? I don't know. I mean, I don't vote based on genitalia. Do you? I kind of try to stay away from that. It's kind of icky, and I don't really want to think about what they've got going on down there. Yeah, whatever they want, go ahead. I don't want to hear anything about it. Mark Cuban, obviously big, big time supporter of Kamala Harris. Nice message. Congrats, real Donald Trump. You won fair and square. Congrats to Elon Musk as well. Godspeed. No surprise, I suppose. Let me give you one of the Joe Scarboroughs here. You want Joe Scarborough or Joy Reid? Joy Reid is fun. Joy Reid's probably insane. Can we do clip 22? This is Joy Reid losing it on MSNBC.
You just think about just the last 2 weeks and the things that Donald Trump has said into the TV that people could hear him say and do, the vulgarity in front of families with young children and the threats to do mass deportation and a violent start to his dictatorship on day one. And you name it, if all of that gets you half of the votes,
48-49%,
what does it tell you? I mean, we need to really take a step back and think about what does that say about us?
What it says about you, Joy, is you were lying about all the things you just said. You have this fake view as to what Donald Trump is going to do. You all know it's a lie. Remember, of course, the guy, Joe Scarborough, on your own network was largely responsible for getting him all the media attention in his first run. You all know who he is. And look, there's a couple sad things here. Let me give you one sad thing, one happy thing before we leave, if you happen to be a Democrat. I'll give you two happy things. How about that? We'll end this in a positive way, because I could sit here and rant about this all day. I don't feel bad at all. I don't have I don't feel bad for any of these people in the media that did this. They're terrible, terrible people who watched a man get shot on stage and then decided their closing argument should be that guy's Adolf Hitler. I'm sorry. That's your approach. You're just a terrible human being, and you probably want to get the guy killed. So I have no sympathy for you whatsoever. But here's two positive things for you. You can take this home. Number one, your ratings are going to go up. Congratulations. People are going to start caring about you again. They're going to start watching you again. Donald Trump will bring the numbers back and probably get you a brand new contract, Joy Reid and Joe Scarborough. So you got that going on for you. That's number one. Number two, you can be completely rid of Kamala Harris. She will be out of your life. She's done. Unless you let her back in the door. I wouldn't suggest that, but you got through this. Your worst case scenario here was a loss. And if you got the loss, at least you're rid of Kamala Harris and Tim Walz for the end of time. And I, for one, am here for that. It is impossible for me to describe how excited I am that this election is over. I want to get back to thinking about sports all the time instead, because it has been a long, long journey. So let me tell you about America's number one daily fantasy sports app, Prize Picks. Every week, Prize Picks offers promotions that lead to huge payouts. Take Taco Tuesday, for example. Like if you're going for someone and they've got like, I don't know, 20 points, and you want to do more than 20 points for a particular player, they'll discount that player to like 15 points. And now it's a lot easier to get the win. Mm-hmm. They like to do that for you. They like to give you more value in your lineup. Prize Picks is the best way to get in on action on all the sports that you love in most states, including California, Texas, and Georgia. It's the only real money daily fantasy platform with an injury insurance policy. So like if you get screwed with your guy in the first half and they like break their leg and Now, not only is it terrible for them, but also for your lineup. You can actually wind up getting a little relief with their injury insurance policy. You've also got the flex play, which is great. Like if you're going for five things and you only get four of them right, you can still cash out even if your lineup isn't perfect. You can turn your sports opinion, your sports love into real money all year long. Download the Prize Picks app today. Use the code STUSPORTS. You'll get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. Stu Sports on Prize Picks. Get $50 instantly when you play only $5. You don't even need to win to get the $50 because it's guaranteed. So check it out now. It's a Prize Picks app. You're going to love it. Prize Picks, run your game. I'm joined once again by Daniel Horowitz. He's senior editor of Blaze News and host of the Blaze podcast, Conservative Review, which you can subscribe to wherever you get your podcast. Daniel, thanks for coming on the program.
Hey, what a night. What
a
day.
Big day, right? Like, I feel like this is it's a happy day. A lot of good things happened. And we'll get into the fact that it was not perfect. Mm-hmm. But when you step back, I mean, look, I think a lot of things could have gone wrong. I thought Trump would win, but I wasn't betting my life on it. It could have gone either way. I mean, overall, a pretty good night, right?
You know, the bottom line is the GOP base turned out in force in all 50 states, surprisingly, even in blue states. Mm-hmm. And the Democrat base, largely in urban areas, didn't turn out. And if you think about it, when have we ever had an election where there was one side that literally had no narrative? You know, their top thing on the exit polling was democracy.
Yeah,
usually it's jobs, inflation, yeah, crime, security, national security. They had no vision because, well, they do have a vision, but they couldn't articulate it because the voters didn't want it. And I think that's the important takeaway from last night. This was not some sort of technical victory. This was a massive mandate. Here's the thing. Trump's favorabilities were not that great in exit polling, as we always knew.
Yep. It's built into his candidacy.
And that's the good news with that is you can't say people were voting for him like Obama. Obama was the inverse.
Right.
They loved the person. They hated the policies. Mm-hmm. People want the policy change. And to me, that is the takeaway. That, you know, the swing voters didn't vote for him because they love his personality. They want the invasion stopped. They want the inflation stopped. They want the indoctrination stopped. And I think, the biggest urgency I have is, like, I feel like this is 2017 all over again, 2005 when Bush won, surprisingly. We cannot afford to fall asleep. We got to seize this opportunity, harness this energy, and start building on how to implement the MAGA and not just talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's an interesting lesson, I think, I will say, from Joe Biden, who I think was a massive failure as a president and did a lot of really terrible things for the country. But if I were a progressive, I think I'd be pretty impressed by his presidency. He came in a very tight election. He didn't have 60-seat filibuster-proof majorities to deal with like Obama did. And he got done more from the progressive perspective than I think Obama was able to do. He did all sorts of things that I think were illegal and broke the Constitution, and I think they were terrible. But, like, he went for it. He went for it. And, I don't want Donald Trump breaking the Constitution. I don't want him doing illegal things. But I do want him to go for it.
But here's the thing, and you're absolutely right, but the core difference is those policies were unpopular. Mm-hmm. Whereas here, what we learned last night is, you know, every single ballot initiative that dealt roughly with the immigration issues, non-citizens voting, mm-hmm, state enforcement in Arizona passed by 25 points to allow state police officers to enforce immigration law, every anti-crime measure in California, repealing the downgrading of drug and theft charges, passed 70-30 in California. So when it comes to the core issues that he campaigned on, he has a mandate, and I'm not worried about overreach. I'm just worried about actually implementing it. I mean, it looks like Republicans are going to have possibly about 54 or so senators more than most thought. Mm-hmm. The House is still very close, will hinge upon the California races, but the consensus seems to be they'll roughly hold the narrow margin that they have now. So they will have a trifecta again. But I think the question we need to answer after we finish celebrating is, what are we going to do to make sure it doesn't wind up repeating 2017 all over again, where Trump did a lot of good things executively, foreign policy. When it came to some of these domestic policies, the budget bills, the farm bills, the reauthorization bills, the things that are really going to determine inflation, determine our freedoms, repealing the Green New Deal, that has to be, you know, an ironclad commitment. Republican lobbyists are already trying to push to keep some of it. Echoes of the repeal Obamacare fight that turned into repeal and replace and then not repeal it at all.
Right.
That's playing out. And, you know, obviously I don't have expectations we're going to repeal the Great Society or something. I think we need to set realistic core expectations. The border, empowering interior enforcement on immigration. I mean, that's Trump won Hispanic males outright. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the notion that there's not a mandate for that is absurd. There's a huge mandate, even on mass deportation, which, frankly, you don't even need to do that. You just cut off the magnets and stop inviting it, stop the employment. They go home. And, you know, yeah, we're not going to cut all spending overnight, but there's hundreds of billions of unspent infrastructure fund, you know, the $1 trillion infrastructure bill, the chips and salsa bill, that thing we call $350 billion there, the Green New Deal, obviously, that needs to be reversed. In other words, the Biden policies need to be reversed.
Mm-hmm.
It's unrealistic to expect that we're going to, you know, reverse 50 years of socialism in a presidency, but the Biden policies, as far as they're concerned, he has a full mandate to repeal them.
Yeah, and I think, too, I agree with you. You're not going to get all the stuff that I want done. I've got to repeal the 16th Amendment cup here. Like, I get that I might not be getting that in the next 4 years. Though I will say, if it has to be bigger than just repeal Biden's damage. You have to be able to push back beyond that, because I think a lot of times we get into that pattern where we're just like, all right, well, we're going to undo the damage that they just did, and then we're just back to zero, and then they get elected again and do it again.
That.
Right,
I mean,
we're not even doing
that. I've tempered my expectations. I'm just telling you, every GOP energy lobbyist, including the Republican governors, they love the EV credits, they love the solar and wind credits, the carbon capture credits. That is, see, I'm just saying that's going to be a big fight. The number one fight is, before anything, full stop, no lame duck session. Pass a clean CR until March, turn the lights out. Do not pass anything else. So that way we can immediately work on the budget. Because here's the cautionary tale. And again, I don't want to throw cold water on things.
Yeah, yeah.
But let's remember that Democrats had to own a terrible stagflation, terrible economy. Republicans get in there, now they own it. And realistically, what are you going to do to stop inflation? We could talk about Biden inflation all we want, and we could forget about the Republicans during and before Biden in Congress
that
helped it out. But even if the Republicans were a brand new party that started yesterday and nothing to do with it, not their fault, what are you going to do to cut that deficit? I'm just going to tell you everything they're proposing, and some of the tax cuts we, in a vacuum, we support, they're all going to add to the deficit. Hmm. So we do need a plan on how to fulfill the core promises, the core mandates.
So let's think about this in a situation, because I'm with you. It seems like they're going to get the House, though. I mean, thinking about a bunch of California seats over 2 weeks of counting makes me a little nervous too. And they're not all great Republican.
No.
But let's say they get the House enough to get something done with reconciliation. They've got the Senate, they've got the presidency. They're not going to be able to get through filibuster-proof type policies. They're going to have to do reconciliation. What can they actually legitimately get done with that bill?
So, I mean, look, anything fiscal, obviously, if you want to cut inflation, you cut spending.
Yeah.
That is what budget reconciliation is all about, that you are allowed to pass a resolution as long as it has a net budget cut. You get it once a year to get around spending. Now, I'm just going to tell you, through the front door, without blunt force trauma from a vigilant conservative movement and media, working in tandem with Trump, creating red lines, left to their own devices, we have not moved the current Republican House or Senate to the right one iota. It's the same type, including some of the new guys. They are kind of same old, and it is what it is. I know people are happy we didn't get a Democrat.
Yeah.
But right now, let's be realistic. On their own, it will be tax cuts and some more drilling. But here's the thing. If you are serious about curbing the trajectory of inflation, you can't drill baby drill, but spend baby spend. Okay, it will help a little bit on the supply side of energy, but keep in mind, energy prices have actually been down while core inflation is up, because it's all the spending and the servicing of the treasuries that we need to service the interest on the debt.
Yeah.
we need a realistic approach that definitely begins with repealing the Green New Deal and the Biden policies. But you're right. It's so bad that even that alone is really not going to do it.
Mm. So I look at this and I look at the Democrats' approach here. What they tried to promote was democracy as this issue, right? Which is just sort of this esoteric nonsense. Like, I guess if, like, people really believed it was an insurrection, and, you know, I know some people on the left do, but I think if the average person really believed it, if it was much, much different event, maybe that would be effective. But I just don't think that connects with people. The only policy that seemed to connect with some portion of voters was abortion. And I guess you look at this and people were talking about the success in Florida in blocking this bill, which is tremendous. It's going to save lives. And I'm really, really for it. But, like, really, the reason that won is because they had to get to 60%. Right. Like, you know, I look at this in most states. It seemed to pass again. What was it? Was it North Dakota or South Dakota?
So it was a mixed bag. I mean, in South Dakota and Nebraska, we did defeat it. So I think we're starting to make a comeback. Until now, we were losing everywhere because Republicans were disengaged. So now in some of the deep red states, we're defeating it. Missouri, it passed by 2 points. But I would argue if you had a DeSantis there with the voter registration edge, the church going rates that you have in Missouri, the highest in the nation outside of Utah, there's no question they would have defeated it.
Yeah.
The Republican governor there, Mike Parsons, was in the witness protection program. I mean, he's a lame duck. He doesn't care. They don't have any transcendent figures. It did win in Montana, unfortunately. I think this is something that we have to just gradually rebuild on that issue. But there's really no evidence last night that it harmed us. I think the type of voters that care about that enough to elevate it as the top issue, they've already been moving away from the GOP with its current image. So I really think any bleeding we incurred on that, you know, that's water under the bridge by now. And right now it's what's practical. I think Democrats made the mistake that conservatives have made many other years, that we're into our abstract principles, constitutional rights. And, you know, people just know from, okay, the bread and butter and things like inflation. So they did it in reverse, like my democracy. It was also kind of dumb because Trump already was president. People are scared about the new unknown.
Yes,
like he was.
It may have worked in 2016.
Like, you might not like him.
Yeah.
But you can't say he's Hitler.
No, he's already been the president. Like, people, they're like, well, I mean, look at January 6th. Yeah, the way January 6th ends if Hitler is president is he kills everybody, right? Like, that's how that ends. Like, it's not, he doesn't just leave a few hours late. All right, so last one. You kind of give me your outlook. What should the priorities be here as, this is a big change. And, like, the country, I mean, the markets are rallying like crazy today. We're seeing real, I think, excitement, particularly in the business community, for a Trump presidency. What does this mean? What's the outlook? What should be the focus of conservatives?
Okay, so the focus should be 1 and 2 of the Trump voters in the exit polling. Mm. Inflation, immigration. Mm. Immigration, I think, is going to be a little easier. So let's just take both of them. Immigration, I think that a lot you could do executively simply because the law dictates that we not let them in anyway. It's Biden who was violating the law and creating his own, you know, extra legislative amnesty programs. So you just shut that off from day one. You make it clear we're done. I will say just on that, the important thing is I'm seeing this stuff about spending a fortune on doubling the Border Patrol, which has actually tripled since the Bush era. Yeah. We don't need more border agents. This is not a FEMA natural disaster problem. It's an orchestrated invitation. If you cut off the magnets and you do interior enforcement, they won't come. I think one of the things that need to be fought for very hard, and I know this is my pet peeve, but it needs to get into the water table of conservative thought. If you have one or two things to expend political capital on, if you're able to stick it into reconciliation or a must-pass bill, I would put in state enforcement much more than border security. Mm. Right now, we have about 5,000 deportation officers, ERO officers under ICE. That's like a quarter of the size of NYPD. The states are the ones that are coming into contact with them on the streets every day committing the crimes. The states need to be empowered to enforce all immigration laws. That's number one. When you go to inflation, the economy, look, Trump would be a hero if he was the first one to finally crack the nut. Every Republican president is like, lower spending and lower taxes. And they do the lower spending, lower taxes.
Taxes, yeah.
But the spending goes up and up and up with every Republican presidency.
And this has not been a strong point for Trump. All of his good things,
no, it has not been. That is, you know, you could talk about drill, baby, drill all you want. This is checkmate. Okay, if you add no new spending, which a lot of Trump's promises, both on the tax cut side and spending side, it's going to create, you know, more deficit spending, more military spending. Every time he gets in there, he wants to do more of that. Mm-hmm. The $1.2 trillion interest per year is there. I mean, I think in the past, it's been very challenging for Republicans to be the daddy party because the left is very good at creating programs we didn't need, but then acculturating people to them, yep, making them dependent on them. That's always been the enigma. But that's back when, like during the Ross Perot days with his little charts, yes, oh, there's going to come a day when your grandchildren have to pay. No one gives a darn about that. Here, right, it's not about one day you have to pay it back. Right now, you cannot afford the cost of living because of that, mm-hmm, because of the spending. If you want to alleviate inflation, you're going to have to do away with some of this stuff. He needs to be the first one to say that. And to put one more finer point on the budget, the number one thing is healthcare. You got healthcare is a dumpster fire. It ties into RFK's thing. We spend more money and we're sicker than anyone. Mm-hmm. And we have a bunch of grifters, third, fourth, fifth party transfers when it comes to healthcare. We need to restore the doctor-patient relationship. If he doesn't want to fully repeal Obamacare, at a minimum, some of this he could do executively. States need to be given flexibility to allow insurers to offer any plan they want. Mm. What this will allow people to do.
You mean
do,
like capitalism?
Yeah, you know, oh, wow, like, huh, offer of that, kind, yeah, of like catastrophic, but yeah, that you're not spending a Cadillac price for catastrophic like it is now under Obamacare. Then people could evacuate from the system, go to these direct primary care, independent-minded doctors that we saw during COVID, mm-hmm, that fought the system, and know that they're taking care of for hospitalization. That's how you could start decentralizing the system. That's how you could start weaning people off the programs. But as long as the Obamacare coverage mandates are there, you will never solve healthcare. And if you don't solve healthcare, you won't solve the budget. You don't solve that, you won't solve inflation.
Mm. I mean, there's a lot to be done because we've been screwing, yep, it up for like a century or so. So there's a lot of work to do. Hopefully we can get into this. Daniel Horowitz, senior editor of Blaze News and host of the Blaze podcast, Conservative Review. Make sure you go and subscribe to it right now. Daniel, thanks for this great breakdown. And as this goes through, as these bills come up, I want to have you back on and you can tell me everything they're doing wrong, please.
Now is when the real ball game begins.
There we go. All right. Thanks again. How much time do you spend thinking about worst case scenarios? If you're a person who is prepared for them, the answer might not be all that much time because, you know, you've already prepared, right? That's the whole point of preparation. And you could take all of that burden off of you and your family. What would you do if one of your children needed a certain medication and then couldn't get it? If there's a supply shortage and your order is on backup or, you know, a weather emergency and you can't get to the pharmacy? There's something you could do to ensure that you and your loved ones have the medication on hand that you need when you need it. It's a solution that thousands of people have already discovered, and it's called the Jace case. This is allowing you to stock up on medication now so you're prepared if something goes wrong. The Jace case is a personalized emergency kit that contains essential antibiotics and medications that treat the most common and deadly bacterial infections, and it provides life-saving antibiotics for emergency use. You just got to fill out a simple form online and you'll have it in case you need it. So go to Jace.com, enter the code STU at checkout for a discount on your order. The promo code is STU at Jace.com, Jase.com. The code is STU. All right, so stop me if you heard this one. Two black women, an Asian, a transgender, and a Native American walk into Congress. Well, let me tell you the story. It's a little bit, you need to know the context, I guess. Two black women are projected to serve in the Senate at the same time. Skin color. What else would you vote on but skin? I know genitals. I know you want to vote on the genitals, but skin color. This is skin color and genitals. Black women. Yay! They're going to have horrible policies, by the way. But it's, by the way, also Brooks is one of them, and Lisa Blunt Rochester. So congratulations to them. Now, that's two black women. How about an Asian? Andy Kim has won in New Jersey. This is actually really close. New Jersey was a situation where Trump did really well. You know, he talked a lot about doing, you know, winning in New York, and he didn't really come close there. New Jersey kind of did, though. Only lost by about 5 points. Andy Kim had a long wait to become the senator, but of course, a Democrat, and does win. He's the first Korean American senator. Then, what about a transgender? Ah, yes, Sarah McBride becomes the first out transgender person elected to Congress. Doesn't that make you excited? Because now you can could think again about genitals. So that's pretty good. You know, it's funny because like all this identity politics obviously has not worked for the Democrats, right? Like, I do think a good chunk of the pushback here is related to the insanity, right? Saying a minimum wage should be a little higher or a tax rate should be a little higher. It might be a policy you like or don't like, but it doesn't. None of it seems completely bonkers, right? When you're saying, hey, we should have boys spiking volleyballs into your daughter's faces. That does seem crazy. And so that kind of moved people. So it's two black women, an Asian, a transgender, and a Native American. Oh, yeah, Elizabeth Warren won. She's back in your life for many, many years to come. And I think she's saying how in that particular photo, which, by the way, is hateful. She shouldn't mock a Native American culture. Her own people just being mocked. All right, we're back in a second. Kind of feels like things are pretty good, right? And look, they are right now. There's no reason you can't take a step today and a day to just kind of like relax and say, gosh, something went right. Some good things happened. Now, there's a lot of work to do. As we talked with Daniel Horowitz earlier on, things can still go wrong and you still need to prepare yourself for those things if they do come around the corner. That starts by having an emergency food supply. Storing food in your home is the right thing to do because we are living in crazy times, no matter who is president. This explains, by the way, how many people are preparing, and that's what you can do as well with a three-month emergency kit from My Patriot Supply. It comes with delicious foods, like stuff like, you know, you'd eat anyway, like honey wheat bread and creamy stroganoff and mushroom rice pilaf. And the entire kit offers over 2,000 calories every single day. This food lasts for like 25 years in storage, so you know, who knows what our country will look like then, but you don't have to think about it until then. When it comes and the time comes, something goes wrong, you'll be ready. If you go to preparewithstew.com, preparewithstew.com, order your three-month emergency food kit from My Patriot Supply. If you go to preparewithstew.com, it's My Patriot Supply. Get your food now at preparewithstew.com. You know, we had a lot of good news yesterday, and hopefully it will be coming for the next few years. That's really exciting. But I do want to remind you that one of the worst people in America is coming back to Congress. That's right. Nancy Pelosi is back for a 20th term. 20 terms. Now, she has turned this into a money factory. So I guess if you happen to like, you know, if you ever watch those like scam documentaries, I love those. Like they come on CNBC and it's about how people scam other people. From that perspective, kind of impressive. I mean, she's really done something impressive here. But 20 freaking years. I don't know. What do you say? Term limits, 19 terms. Can we start there? I know it's crazy. I know it's wacky. But there you go. By the way, tonight I will be back here yet again with Glenn tonight, talking about the election with more analysis. He's going to be on live, actually, 8 p.m. Eastern on Blaze TV. Don't miss that, blazetv.com. If you go to blazeelection.com/stew, you can save $47.